This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Hello and welcome to another edition of the Toastmasters podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome again to another edition of the Toastmasters podcast. My name is Bo Bennett.
And I'm Ryan Levesque.
And Ryan, who are we speaking with today?
Today, Bo, we are speaking with a Toastmasters podcast favorite, our most frequent guest on the show, Mr. Matt Abrahams. Matt is the author of the book Speaking Up Without Freaking Out. He teaches strategic communication at Stanford University's Graduate School of Business in Stanford, California, and is co-founder of Bold Echo Communication Solutions. And Matt has an article in the March 2013 edition of the Toastmaster magazine, Tame Your Stage Fright. Matt Abrahams, welcome to the Toastmaster podcast.
Welcome, Matt.
Welcome. Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here. And I'm wondering, do you guys have like a frequent flyer card or something?
Yeah, we'll swipe your card at the end of the show to give you some extra points.
Matt, if you're on twice more, you get a free cup of coffee.
Oh, hey. I'll take it.
Well, I think this is your, if I remember, your third appearance on the show. As I shared with you, Matt, and I want to share with our listeners as well, I had the opportunity this past fall to give the test speech at the District 31 evaluation contest. And I was asked to do the speech on a Sunday, and the contest was the following Saturday. So I had barely a week to put together a speech from scratch. And, oh, by the way, can you make it humorous? was the request. And I'll say that I think it went quite well, but in no small part to the four-page, 22-point plan that I put together based on the strategies in your book. So thank you again for that. I can attest that these strategies really do work.
Well, congratulations on being able to pull that off. That definitely sounds nerve-wracking, and I'm glad you found some techniques that were useful, and you got through that unscathed and feeling really good about it.
Yes.
And you. I was there as a witness. He did a wonderful job.
Excellent. So you're next, Bo, right?
No, Ryan actually asked me to speak at the spring conference.
I did.
But I turned him down. But I did get somebody else to speak in my place, and so everything worked out just fine.
Great. And by the way, Bo can also attest that minutes before I went on stage, do you remember we went through the back doors of the conference room?
You're doing push-ups?
Yeah. I dropped down to the floor and did some push-ups to get that
nervous energy out.
Exactly. Yeah. So
great. That's stuff. You know, if you can do it, do it.
Right. Cool. So excited to talk about your latest article, Tame Your Stage Fright. There's a lot of stuff here, a lot of techniques from your book. And I don't know, what would you like to talk about first, Matt?
So first, these techniques are really ones that I came up with in response to many of the questions that I received after speaking at this past summer's international convention. I was honored to be asked to give an education workshop there, had hundreds of people attend, and afterwards, many people came up asking very specific questions about some anxiety symptoms and signs that they have. And in talking with the great folks at Toastmasters, we decided that it would be a good idea to capture some of these questions and some of the responses. And so that's what this article is really about. And so what I tried to do is really provide specific guidance along three primary lines, responding to physical symptoms that people have, addressing some psychological issues that come around the anxiety, and then just some very practical concerns, like how do you address some very specific practical preparation techniques. I'm happy to address any of them if you guys have some questions.
Sure. Yeah. Well, let's start with the physical symptoms. And there's, you said before we started, we could throw some curveballs. So maybe I'll throw one at you in a moment. But one of the physical symptoms you talk about is becoming red in the face, neck, or upper chest, as well as shaking, of course. But one thing I know that I forget what the name of the condition is. You probably know, Matt, or Bo will know, where people have a high frequency of blushing. And I think there's even some kind of, isn't there some kind of, I don't know if it's a surgery, I guess it's a surgery procedure where they cut a nerve or something like that to help control that. Your article doesn't talk about anything quite that invasive.
No, I'm against drastic measures like that, especially when it's a pretty realistic or easy to use and relatively painless approaches exist.
Shy of undergoing the knife, Matt, what are some things folks can do to control those embarrassing, frustrating physical symptoms?
Right. So especially with blushing and shaking, they're things that we as speakers intensely feel, and we become very concerned about what that portrays to our audience. So it not only is it difficult to have these symptoms, but they actually become distracting to us and can ultimately make us more nervous. So there are a couple things that I recommend. First and foremost is breathing is absolutely critical. When we get up and are prepared to speak and we have some anxiety, we tend to breathe very shallow from our upper chest. We tend to breathe very quickly. And all of this exacerbates many of these physiological responses that we're having. So prior to speaking, if one can take some really deep belly breaths, counting 3, 4, inhale, as you inhale, count to 3 or 4, and then exhale equally slowly, this does wonderful things for reducing your heart rate, reducing your blood pressure. And those are key factors in blushing and in shaking. Mm. So deep breaths is a good place to start. Let me address each one separately. So with blushing, and I don't necessarily blush, but I actually perspire, and that is also a similar result of the blood traveling more quickly due to anxiety. And a really simple technique is to reduce your core body temperature. And just like if you have a fever and somebody might put a cold compress on your forehead or in the back of your neck, you have similar temperature receptors on the bottom of your feet and in the palms of your hands. So what I do before I speak is I'll hold a cold bottle of water in my hand or a cold glass of water, not while I'm on stage, but immediately prior. That also allows me to take a sip to make sure that I'm not suffering from dry mouth. And by having something cold in my hand, it can reduce my core temperature, reduces the sweating, reduces the blushing. Doesn't necessarily make it go away, but it actually reduces it, and it gives you the sense of agency or control in that situation. So that's a wonderful technique, very simple to execute on for blushing and sweating. Mm. For shaking, what we need to do is we need to give that energy, that adrenaline, a place to go. And the two techniques I strongly recommend is when you begin a presentation, make some big body gestures. So welcome your audience by extending your arms out. The big movement activate large muscles in your body that get some of that energy out. And another simple thing you can do is squeeze your toes together. Nobody can use squeezing your toes in your shoes. Something like that gives that energy a place to go. Hmm. And in the article, I actually talk about a student of mine in one of my classes who was an ultra marathon runner, super fit gentleman, really, really skinny. And he would get the shakes when he would get nervous. And because he was so skinny, his clothes were just draped on him. And you could actually see the clothes billowing in the wind, much like a sailor when you're out. And what we had him do is just do some of these squeezing of his toes or actually a couple of his fingers together, and it immediately stopped. So giving that adrenaline a place to go is very helpful.
And I will just add, for all of the preparation speeches I gave for my speech at the district conference, as I was about to be introduced and being introduced, I was sitting in my seat, squeezing my thumb and index finger together. That's a true story. And I think what you mentioned earlier too about giving the speaker a sense of agency, just having like these techniques at the ready made me feel like I could take some control in the situation and I didn't have to be victim to these terrible feelings in my body.
So let me share a funny story. Well, I think it's kind of funny. I don't know, actually, if it's funny or insulting. But
we'll tell you.
Because of my book, it's a series of techniques to help people manage anxiety. I had one person come up to me and said, I've never read your book, but just knowing that it exists gives me a sense of control that I could do something about my anxiety. So I thanked the guy, and then I said, I don't know if that's a good thing. But I wanted to actually have the techniques and use them. But I agree. Agency is absolutely critical when you're experiencing anxiety.
Right.
There's even more of a sense of control if they shell out the money to buy the book and it's sitting on their shelf. That's what you should tell them.
I guess.
Even
I
if
guess.
You don't read it, just buy it. Yeah. It'll do wonders.
Trust me.
Exactly.
Trust me. I have a question for you, Matt. The two different techniques seem to be completely contrasting. For example, before a speech, doing some push-ups, doing some jump jacks, getting out some of the energy. And the other technique would be just calmly breathing, taking deep breaths. It seems like you could go into two completely different directions, but both have the same result. Why do you think that is? Is it the type of personality? Maybe they both interact with the same kind of system? I mean, what do you think?
So the reality is everybody responds differently to ways of managing anxiety. And for some people, doing push-ups and or something physical like that, a brisk walk, what those are doing is helping you to become present-oriented. For some people, their anxiety is a result of thinking of the future consequences of what they're doing. And they get so wrapped up in the future and the potential negative consequences that really spins them out of control. So doing something very physical, like push-ups, brings you in the present moment. Hmm. And that's how that technique can be helpful. Now, for other people, doing push-ups causes the heart rate to go up, causes you to sweat. That's just going to put you down a bad path because those are symptoms and signs that make your anxiety even worse. So for those people, focusing inwardly, really focusing on their breathing, calming down the excited heart rate and the blood pressure can actually help. So it really has to do with the source of anxiety, where that anxiety is coming from, and just past experience with what you know works for you. You know, not every technique is ideal for every person. You have to find your own. And what I loved hearing in Ryan's talk about his recent presentation was he found some techniques that work for him. He created what I call an anxiety management plan, or an AMP, something that can get you amped up about your presentation that works for him. And his anxiety management plan could look very different than yours, Bo, or very different than mine.
Mine includes vomiting.
Hopefully not. Hopefully not.
Not in the book, but, or the article.
Page 212.
The bottom line is everybody responds differently to techniques, and some of the techniques do seem contradictory, but you wouldn't use the two contradictory techniques in conjunction with each other.
Sure, yeah. I've never tried that before, meditating while doing jumping jacks. But that would be interesting.
There you go. It's a new fitness craze.
Yeah. Matt, how about dry mouth? I think, for me personally, that seems to be my biggest problem. And it's not that I'm always nervous. Sometimes it's just with a lot of talking, my mouth gets extremely dry. And then I just feel uncomfortable constantly taking sips of water. I feel like I'm nervous. It's like the act of actually drinking the water on stage makes me feel more nervous than I actually am. It's just like a vicious cycle.
Right. There's this whole interesting area of psychology, which is exploring how our behaviors affect our internal state. So usually we think the way we feel affects what we do, but in some cases what we do affects how we feel. And in your case, drinking the water reminds you that you're probably nervous, right?
Right, so right, yeah.
Dry mouth is, I like to call it plumbing reversal. When people get very nervous, things that are normally wet get dry, and what are normally dry get wet. So your palms get sweaty, but your mouth gets dry, and that's the opposite of how they normally are. And it's, again, a physiological response. It makes sense for the body to be doing those things when you're under a situation of threat. For dry mouth in particular, drinking warm water is a wonderful way to address that before you speak. Mm-hmm. During your speaking, you know, I've seen speakers who are so nervous that when they pick up the bottle of water, they spill it because their hands are shaking so much.
Yeah.
I know of a speaker who was taking a sip of water and spilled on the microphone and actually shorted the microphone.
Jeez.
So, you know, it you got to take that with the risk that comes with it. But two other bits of advice. One is, before you speak, before you present, actually speak. A lot of us go inside ourselves when we're preparing to speak, and we get very quiet. And actually, we need to warm ourselves up. A singer will sing the scales before he or she gives a performance. A runner will stretch before she goes and does a run. We should warm up our voices and by speaking, and that gets the saliva going. Mm. So that's something to do immediately prior to speaking. But way before that, we should practice reading out loud, practice your presentations out loud. Unless you do what I do for a living, which is teach a lot, and I'm up talking for half hour, hours at a time, most of us aren't used to speaking for long periods of time, and our body isn't used to responding. So we get short of breath, our mouth gets dry, our throat hurts. So if we practice reading out loud or giving our presentations in advance, it's building up that stamina that you need, and that can really help dry mouth abate.
Great.
I don't think this was in your article, but how about the I slit a sheet tongue twister? Do you want to share that?
You still remember that. Yeah. I'm a big fan of tongue twisters for two reasons. Tongue twisters help you be present oriented. You can't say a tongue twister properly and not be focused on what you're saying. So for those of us, and this is an issue for me, who are worried about the future consequences, saying a tongue twister is much easier than doing 10 push-ups, at least for me. And the other thing it does is it warms up your voice. And Ryan, as you're alluding to, my favorite tongue twister is one that if you say incorrectly, you say a naughty word. So it adds that extra bit of challenge to it. But it's very simple. It's I slit a sheet I slit. And on that slitted sheet, I slit. you figured out where the danger is in that one. But the ultimate thing that is it brings you present oriented and it helps warm up your voice.
Fantastic. That's great, Matt. That's great.
Yeah.
So I know that some of the questions that members of the International Convention audience asked you about had to do with how do I prepare? What can I do so that I'll know my speech, know how to deliver it expertly, etc. So what advice do you have along those lines?
So the first and foremost that is time. Give yourself time. If you have the luxury, you certainly didn't in the situation, Ryan, you shared. But if you have the luxury of time, think of it as two very different processes. There's the process of preparing the speech, that is, writing it, drafting it. I firmly believe in the preparation phase that you write an outline, you write key points, you don't write word for word. If you write word for word, then you've created a script, and that invites memorization, and memorization invites that awful feeling of blanking out and not remembering the words. So during the preparation phase, which is half of the time you have, you're really thinking about key ideas and really focusing on key concepts and themes that you want to cover. The second half of your time is dedicated to actual practicing. And practice, and I know many Toastmasters know this, is actually verbalizing what you're going to say. I am very, very eloquent in my mind, but not in speaking sometimes. So I have to practice having those words come out. So it's really a two-part process. Dedicate time to preparation, dedicate time to practice. And you really want those to be split pretty equally, and that will really help. And then many people who are in the corporate world have their presentation be a PowerPoint deck or some kind of slideshow. We spend too much time writing the slides and not enough time practicing the material. So I really believe that we have to have a firm outline, have a story to tell, practice telling that before we develop slides or any ancillary materials. And that can really, really help people feel more comfortable and confident.
Right.
Something else. There's one other thing I'd like to add.
Sure.
When you practice, you know, practice by itself is good, but really effective practice is targeted towards a goal. So, for example, I really like a form of practicing called chunking. And what chunking does is you take different parts of your presentation and you practice those parts separately and in different orders. So I might have my introduction, might have my first story or first body point, I might have my conclusion. And rather than always practicing from beginning to end, I might start with the middle, then do the end, then do the beginning. What that does is it keeps it fresh for me. It reduces the likelihood that I'm going to memorize. And it makes sure that I touch or practice each part of the presentation equally. Because the reality is most people will just practice their introduction a lot because that's the first thing they say when they feel they're going to be most nervous. And they figure, oh, I'll be able to get the conclusion because it's at the end and I know what I've said. But you've probably both heard speakers who start out strong and then peter off as they go. And this chunking practice helps keep everything equally energetic and well said.
Yeah. Can't tell you how many speeches I heard end with. And yeah, that's about it.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, there are two big, strong findings in memory. We remember what we hear first, there's a primacy effect, and then there's a recency effect, what we hear last. So a wonderful speaker who ends the way you just demonstrated, Bo, we leave with a bad taste in our mouth and we don't reflect favorably on the presentation.
Right. All right, good stuff.
So, Matt, despite our best efforts to prepare, if we find ourselves in a situation when we're on stage, we're making our presentation, and we turn to the audience to make our next point, and we're like, line? Somebody?
Line, please.
Right, exactly. You know, I was fortunate enough to write another article for the Toastmaster magazine about blanking out, and it happened to coincide. It was released just by coincidence at the same time. I don't know if you remember Governor Rick Perry from Texas. He had some memory problems on a very large stage.
Yes.
With a lot of eyes and cameras watching him.
Right.
So it's a very real problem. And the biggest, so two bits of advice I'll suggest for how to avoid blanking out. One is how to avoid it, and the other is what to do when it happens. The single best way to avoid blanking out is to have a firm structure to your presentation, because structure not only helps your audience know what's coming, it's like a roadmap for them, but it helps you know where you are. So, for example, a very common structure that you hear in speeches is a problem-solution-benefit structure, where you start explaining the problem, you then give your solution to the problem and explain the benefits of that solution. If I have that structure and I go blank somewhere in the middle of it, I just have to remember I've already discussed the problem. I know benefits are coming. I must be in the solution piece. So the structure actually helps you get back on track. So you have to really build the presentation with the structure up front. That's what you do in advance to help avoid blanking out. The second thing, when you actually blank out, most people, when they blank out, struggle or ask themselves this question: what am I supposed to say next? What was coming next? What's the next thing I need to say? And what works best, according to lots of memory research, is rather than trying to push ahead, in essence hitting a brick wall, go back and repeat yourself. We're able to recall what we just said prior, and that sort of resets yourself. I don't know if either of you guys played with toy trains when you were growing up, and if you remember, and they'd come off the track. The way you got them back on the track is you picked them up and you rolled them backwards and then they got lined up again. It's that same idea. Repeat what you just said, and then that tends to get people back on track. Hmm. That makes sense?
Yeah, it just happened today. Ryan and I were talking and Ryan got distracted and he said, wait a minute, what did I say? What were we talking about before?
That's right.
So we went back a little bit and then he got right back on track.
Just like that toy train.
Yeah.
Chugga, chugga, chugga.
Yeah, just... That's right.
That's great. So, Matt, what would you say was the most frequent question that came from audience members who attended your session?
Along with the answer to the question.
Along with the answer. So, quite honestly, the most frequent question I am asked, regardless, and it happened at the international convention, is what do I do with my hands? Hmm. Where do I put my hands? When I'm nervous, I feel like my hands are shaking. When I'm presenting, I feel like my hands are flailing. The number one question I get asked as a communication coach, as a professor of communication, is what do I do with my hands? And the answer to that is there are two places you put your hands. They're either down by your side, so when you're poised and waiting to speak, or after you've said something that's very impactful, it's nice to put your hands back down at your side. And I'm talking the position you would stand if you're going to a tailor and he or she is fitting you for some nice clothing. Mm-hmm. Your hands are just relaxing by your side.
Right.
If not, then a resting place, a good resting place, is right in front of your belly button, your navel, with your hands lightly clasped. What we're trying to do is to make ourselves look relaxed. If your hands come up higher, it's the sternum level, your elbows come in, your shoulders come up, and you end up looking very tense. So holding them loosely right around your belly button allow you to look relaxed, and they allow the person looking at you to see both your face, which is what we pay attention to when someone's speaking, and your hands in the same field of view. If your hands get lower, like at your belt level or below, then we can't see them, and we get distracted by not seeing them, so we look down and then we look up. So for people who are anxious or just in general wondering what you do with your hands, find these resting places and get comfortable with them. And once you're comfortable with them, you can work on gesturing to add emphasis to what you're saying.
Okay.
Very good.
Well, thank you so much, Matt, for this again. This is great information. I think everybody has experienced at least one or more times when they've been incredibly nervous. And And sometimes we just kind of wing it and let the emotions take over, and we get carried away, and it the outcome usually is not very good. But I think one of the things that you said that resonated with me the most is the whole idea of agency, is just knowing that these things exist and there is something that you can do about it, even if it's a matter of just increasing the chances that you will do better and increasing the odds that you're not going to be as nervous. So I think what you're saying is great, and I agree, and I give you my check for the day. Okay. Check plus.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. It was really nice to speak with you guys again. Thank you.
Great. Sure. Yeah. Before we let you go, Matt, where can our listeners go to learn more about you, to find your book, and so on?
Great. I'm going to point them to two places. So boldecho.com, BOLDECHO, is a great resource for people looking for some specific advice around presenting in general, how to become more compelling, confident, and connected speakers. And for those who are anxious, the book is called Speaking Up Without Freaking Out, 35 Techniques for Confident, Calm, and Competent Presenting. And the companion website is called nofreakingspeaking.com. And there are lots of good little tidbits similar to what we've talked about today there. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much, Matt.
Thank you. It's good talking to you again.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.